You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast. So important during MLS season, especially a truncated one like this, it's squad rotation. And we're doing a little bit of that one for this week's podcast. I'm hosting Bart Logan. We've got Ori Benatar with us, Sam Fahmy, and Patrick Gul'dan. Gentlemen, how are y'all doing?
It's a fine Tuesday, not quite Thursday.
Not quite Thursday, but doing good. It's quite a crew we got here. No Brian, no Pat, no Alex, but we got this.
Yeah. It's funny that we were all nodding our heads to your question as if anybody could see us nodding.
Oh, that's what the people, this is what they're going to request, just this crew exclusively from here on out. Speaking of, if you would like to, you should rate the Massive Report on all platforms for podcasts. Leave us only nice comments. If you have anything mean you want to say, send that all to Patrick Murphy. I believe you can access his email on the website on themassivereport.com. But again, only nice things for the rest of us. 5 stars. Let's go and give them a reason why to, guys. Columbus Crew, coming off a game in Houston where you had Darlington Nagbe coming back. You had Lucas Zelarayán in, on the bench, the return of Aloy Room, and the result, maybe at least what you saw in that first half from Columbus, not what you expected with the return of those players in a 1-1 draw. What do you think, Ori? What was the return for Darlington Nagbe, a guy we've talked about is such a engine and motor for this team? What did that look like to you?
I think Darlington played well in his return back. You know, he essentially completed all of his passes, which is standard for Darlington Nagbe. So you expect that from him. But he was attempting to transition the play, but Columbus was just unable to transition from the defense to the attack in a very good way. And after the game ended, you know, we're talking about a lot of factors that went into this game. These are tough circumstances the Crew had going into this one in Houston. Jossie Zardes gets hurt like on the last kick of training the day before they go to Houston. So you got to put in Christian Nemeth into the game. You know, he hadn't played a match in months. He was coming in, you know, not knowing the system very well. It was a tough situation for him. To be fair to him, he played well in that situation, and Caleb was really happy to see that he was able to play for 77 minutes. And it's tough when you haven't played in, a match for that long to get 77 minutes in. Plus, they were traveling to Houston day of. It's a long flight. Mm-hmm. And then Caleb called it the worst pitch they've played on all season. Worse than Nippert.
And you could say something.
You could see it on the TV.
They have a history of having really bad pitch. Yeah, even in a new stadium.
Yeah, I don't think the groundskeeper kept up the sand trap as much as you would expect.
Yeah, it was bad, and you could see it on television. So just a lot of circumstances for the Crew. I don't think any of that really excuses the performance. The first half was not good. The whole game was not good. They didn't transition well into the attack. I think Lucas Zelarayán added a little bit off the bench, but Columbus was just not creating enough at all, and they were allowing Houston to get so much space to move forward. Houston was playing on the counter. The Crew's first two shots on target were by Houston players, a near own goal, and then a few minutes later, the own goal. So scrappy enough to get a draw. It's good that they got a point out of this game, because the way that Houston was playing, they should have easily won probably 4-5-1. If they were more clinical in front of goal, we would be talking about a Columbus loss, and it would be basically, sure, a win against New York City, but losses to Montreal, Cincinnati, a draw against Houston, all scrambled within this 4-game stretch. They're starting to be further away from that number one seed with only 4 games left in the season, and we'll be talking about that a little later on, but not a great performance from the Crew. But in terms of the guys that came back from injury, Aylor Room had that mistake on the goal. I think Darlington Nagbe played well. Zelarayán did as much as he could off the bench in a tough game for them.
Well, you talked about not being clinical in front of goal for Houston, but that was also the case for Columbus. One player in particular, singled out by Caleb Porter around halftime was Pedro Santos, who had a couple really, really great chances there at the end of that first. And Caleb said that, you know, he thought his team should be up 2-1 going into the intermission. That wasn't the case. And this was not a standout performance, certainly not on the caliber that we've seen from Pedro Santos in recent weeks and months, Pat Gul'dan. What was your assessment of Pedro and just that anemic crew attack that did seem like it caught up a little bit in the second half?
I always like Caleb talking about chances and stuff like that, because I have to disagree. Pedro's mm-hmm. first chance was from distance. It wasn't anything that you'd consider a great chance. You know, he kind of rushed it. He was creating something. He was creating something out of nothing, because that's what the crew offense had. His second chance right before halftime, you know, on his left foot in the box, that's something you put on target and you make the goalkeeper do something about. And that's the one I think that you really have to circle about. That was a team effort to build up that chance for him. And that's what was really missing, the fluidity throughout really most of the game. So I single out Pedro as maybe the lone bright spot in that first half, in that he was able to actually create something out of nothing, because there was a whole lot of nothing going on. I wouldn't say either of the wings really created much danger going forward. And then, you know, Kristen Nemeth was kind of on an island and really wasn't effective. But I think that would have been true of anybody that they started up there, from Adi to Zardes and anywhere in between.
What about in goal? We have the return of Aloy Room. Allows the one, though, I think a little bit hard to fault him on, a little bit chaotic. But in general, it seemed like it was a nice, you know, good calming presence to have back for Columbus.
I think that Aloy, what he does, both him and Tarbell are great shot stoppers. I think the thing that Room is able to do noticeably better than Tarbell is that he is much more of a distributor. He has much more accuracy in his passes, and so when he is able to get the ball around, you could see them trying to break any sort of high press with the mid balls over the top. He has a lot of capability there, and I thought that his mobility, his you know, shot stopping was pretty much on par. He got a palm to the ball and, you know, kind of spilled a little bit, and maybe you hope that he kind of covers that, but, you know, at extension, it's a little bit tough to follow up on.
And then obviously there's the return of Lucas El Arayan, comes on, played, you know, the entire second half. Definitely, I mean, this did look like a different team. I think it was maybe the result of numerous subs, not just the inclusion or reintroduction of Lucas there for the second half. But you know, what is it? What did this team? How did they look different with Lucas in there for them?
I think Lucas offers obviously more dynamic playmaking. We just didn't see as much of that in the second half against Houston. I personally felt that Luis Diaz was the most effective substitute mm-hmm. in that second half. He was able to run in behind on that right-hand side when he was subbed in for Etienne. And his cross, you know, gave Columbus the goal. You got to be able to do something in any situation and allow yourself any kind of chance to score. It doesn't always have to be the perfect goal. You know, they all count the same. It's the old cliche, but it's true. And you take anything you can get. And in a game like that, where Houston's coming out of the gate, they're playing on their field, their terrible field, they're getting chances, they have a lot of space to use, they're utilizing counterattacks well and putting pressure on you. And while I agree with Patrick that Aloy Room is a better distributor than Tarbell, but that game, I can recall maybe four or five times where they would show a highlight, a Houston chance, and then as soon as the MLS sort of wipe stopped, Houston had the ball back in Columbus's half. And that happened a couple of times because Columbus was just not into it in terms of the passing. And Luis Diaz offered up that sort of, hey, we need a kick up. We need to do something here. And his speed and getting that cross in for the own goal really, really helped that quite a bit. So, and, you know, with Namath in, it's just such a tough situation. This was a very odd circumstance type of game for Columbus. There are just so many factors that played into it. And they're lucky to get the point, but at the same time, you would expect them to beat this team. And when we were talking about this team way back in the late summer, this team hadn't lost a game. They're keeping clean sheets at home. Everyone was talking. We were discussing, you know, supporter shield when it was, we knew it was going to be awarded. Now it's not. And we were thinking this team was a favorite to win MLS Cup. And you have to beat those bad teams lower in the table to keep up that standing that you are a favorite to win this tournament. I think Columbus can gain that back in these last four games. They've got to beat DC and put up good performances against Philly, Atlanta, and Orlando mixed in right after the election. I think you have to win at least one of those games, get a draw on another one. So, but I think this stretch with the New York win as sort of the outlier of this four-game stretch, on paper it doesn't look great to lose to Montreal, Cincinnati, and Houston. But they've been dealing with injuries, the rhythm of everything. I think now you'll start to see the rhythm come back. Players are getting healthy. They have a consistent schedule now, two games on Wednesday, two games on Sunday, and they can develop that rhythm that we saw them play with at MLS's back and in the beginning of phase one.
I would agree with you there that we have a chance to see some rhythm develop, because I think if you look at what happened in Houston, you know, Nagby was his solid, dependable self, but there was a little bit missing trying to transition. Santos isn't that kind of playmaker that works well in tight spaces. I think he worked better with Zellerayan, but Zellerayan is also more of a field player that he needs to develop that game touch back too. So, you know, this is a case where you're looking at going to DC on Wednesday and you're hoping that you have Nagby for 75 minutes, Zellerayan for 60, 75 minutes. And they've gotten a few more touches under the belt where they're at game action, and you could start to get that. The problem with this all coming at the end of the season, you have eight games coming in a very, very short amount of time. And even if you have Nagby back and Zellerayan and Zardes is back, maybe not for Wednesday, supposedly maybe against the Union next Sunday, these are a lot of games in a very short amount of time, which you're going to have to rotate in some of the players that you were hoping to step up in this last month. And so you have players like Etienne or Boateng that you're going to have to bring in on the wings and hope that they can turn some sort of performance in. Or you have to try to rotate in and hope that you don't you get some of the better performances out of someone like Aiden Morris in midfield. I'm high on the rookie, but you know you just kind of have to hope, because you know Nagby's going to need a spell. Artur, it's just a lot of rotation coming down the home stretch here.
I want to bring Sam in on this one. We've talked about for a while here, and as you're talking about rotation there, Patrick, obviously the one of the big areas, lack of depth that, you know, was hopefully addressed partially at the end of the transfer window is at striker. Obviously, Jossie Zardes is such a difference when he's in the lineup for this team. Christian Nemeth, again, I think, you know, was pretty serviceable. And we got an idea of how, you know, high Jordan Hamilton is in the pecking order for Caleb Porter, because he played with six midfielders rather than a striker, than bringing on Hamilton for about 7 or 8 minutes in that tie game in Houston, and only brought him in because ostensibly Fernando Adi's out. So you know, with rotation, what does it look like for Columbus if Christian Nemeth has to, you know, remain there at that nine position come Wednesday against a DC team?
Oh, you're probably going to have to put somebody like either Pedro or Emmanuel Boateng or even Lucas Zellerayan as maybe like a false nine type of situation, because that's what you got to do. I was actually two things surprised me. One, with Luis Diaz, of all the games that and all the open shots he's had on goals this season, this is the one he scores from, not an open shot.
Yeah.
Attempted pass. To be fair, Nemeth was right there, and had that ball gone through, he would have tapped it in fairly easily. But yeah, I'm surprised that Jordan Hamilton is that bad, or at least in Caleb Porter's eyes, that bad that he cannot even crack the lineup in it's not really mop up duty, but in position filling duty.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is going to be really tricky, and they have no way of addressing that at this time. So they can't get anybody unless they pick up somebody like they did with Nemeth, where it's somebody who's not attached to a club right now or in a completely different trade window. But yeah, this is going to be really tricky in the forward position. And hopefully Giassi's not hurt too bad. He's not on the injured list, so that's good.
Yeah, he'll be out for DC, but I think we should be expecting Giassi back for Columbus for Sunday's game against Philly. That's what we've been told.
And that's probably fine because, you know, the history of the rivalry between Columbus and DC, if they go in hard, he's not the person that you want to get injured in a game against this team. And you'd better have him for Philadelphia, which is where you really need him more than against more than against DC.
Yeah, and as much as seeding is the priority and getting a good seed is a priority, the number one priority for Columbus is to stay healthy. Because if you want to have any chance of doing anything in the MLS Cup playoffs, you've got to have your full squad ready to go. You can't risk Giassi getting injured. And Caleb said today, as we're recording this earlier this afternoon, you know, we want to get points. Every game is important. But at the same time, we have to rotate. We have to have our number one guys ready to go for the playoffs. So that way, we've seen this team with their full strongest 11, and they have played some fantastic football with that strongest 11. And you need to have that in the playoffs if you want to give yourselves a chance to win MLS Cup in the strangest MLS season of all time. And I think if Columbus has their full 11, hit their stride late in the season, it's possible, especially if they can play maybe a game or two at home in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
So that's what I was going to ask you guys. So when does the playoffs start becoming the primary consideration with these final games? You know, it looks like, I mean, there's a chance, but it's going to be tough to make up the ground to get one of those first round byes. So when do you start considering, you know, okay, maybe I'm not going to put Lucas out for 75 minutes or Nagby out for 75 minutes this Wednesday, because I want to make sure that, you know, they're getting more rest coming back from a injury, so they're going to be ready and at 100% come playoff time. What are the considerations that we should be expecting Caleb Porter to be making with these games, final four games?
You're not going to make those decisions this week. I think that you're not going to look at either the DC or the Philly game as playing a role in that consideration. Where it comes into play is that Orlando or possibly those Atlanta games, where you're starting to think about that, because you don't want to start falling down into, and it's impossible, I believe, at this point to fall down where you start to have to play those play-in games. You'd like to host as many games as possible. And so you're looking at trying to make up. I want to say really quick that it's, 6 points and a game in hand. So that kind of makes those considerations even more murky. So, you know, at earliest, it's on November 4th against Orlando that, you know, if they have just kind of fallen off the pace and they're kind of locked into a three, that they might start rotating and looking to maybe rest some players. But really, they also have to really try to rebuild that form and get everybody on the same page. Point. And this is the time that you do it. You actually have live games. And so I think that for the most part, Caleb's always been a guy that wants to win those games that are right in front of you. And ensure that you have to start thinking about playoffs. But I also think he wants a sharp Zellerion, a sharp Nagby, a Giassi, nice and healthy and ready to go. Any in that first 11 really feeling fit and together and on the same page. And I, you know, when I'm looking at the lineup, the only question on that first 11 is who starts at left center back And is that Josh Williams' position or Abubakeda? And so, you know, this is also an audition for who starts when you need that win, I guess, if you're looking at that too. So it'll be interesting as we look at what Caleb's going to roll out and as far as lineups, who he starts to see as his key guys and then who he starts to see as his key guys off the bench.
Yeah, and speaking about key, the Philadelphia game, I think, is the most important game in the regular season. I think the Philly-Orlando stretch. Now, every game is important, obviously, but I think DC will see a little bit more of a heavier rotation. I think you still see – you probably see Zell Rayon start this time around. He said he's feeling good. He said he's physically 100% fit. I think you'll see him get the start because I think he's a good enough player and can affect enough on the pitch to do well against DC. Bear in mind, DC's not doing well in the standings, but they're on a three-match unbeaten run. They've won their last two games, actually drew Philly, which is now looking like an even more impressive result because Philly just battered Toronto 5-0 over the weekend. So for Columbus to the Philly game's the most important for many reasons. It's at home, middle of the afternoon. It's on national television on ABC, and we'll preview the full match later on. But this is a chance. It's a six-pointer, and if people don't know what a six-pointer is, because they're so close in the table, if Columbus beats Philly, it's as if they're gaining on them 6 points on the math. Because let's say Columbus beats DC and Philly wins their game as well on Wednesday. Philly will still be 6 points ahead. Columbus goes ahead and beats Philly on Sunday. It's a 3-point gap with a game in hand still. So if they can get the win against Atlanta or beat Orlando as well on the road, you're level on points, and then it might come down to goal difference. Right now, Philly is starting to do well on goal difference thanks to that 5-0 win. They have 22. Columbus is at plus 15. So I think we'll see more rotation for the DC and the Atlanta games. I think if you're going to put out your top squad, it's going to be for the Philly game and the Orlando game because those are the really competitive games in the last stretch. I think Atlanta will be competitive as well. They're also starting to they're not finding any kind of rhythm. They haven't won since October 3rd. But Atlanta and DC have a lot more to play for in this situation as well because they need to push for a playoff spot. But I think you can put out and rotate a little more in the DC and the Atlanta game and still expect points rather than for Philly and Orlando where you might need your strongest side.
Well, and that's a good point. And, you know, looking at this DC game, it does, I mean, that obviously the Philly game is going to be huge, but they've got DC first. This is the makings. I would say if Columbus had not found themselves on the short end of a number of trap games already within recent weeks, thinking about Montreal especially, you would say that this DC game Wednesday has the makings of a trap game. A team that you mentioned already won three in a row most recently, a 2-1 win over Atlanta. But, you know, a team that also recently parted ways with, I would argue, their most dynamic playmaker, Federico Higuain. Now you've got Dos Higuains in Miami. Still just led by another former Crew player, Ola Kamara, with just three goals, pacing this DC United team on the campaign. Gentlemen, what are you expecting? I know we talked about the need for rotation. One player that has really stood out since he's kind of come onto the scene in the recent weeks has been Aiden Morse. He will not be available for Wednesday's game. So gentlemen, who do we expect to see Caleb Porter fielding, and what do you expect to see against from this DC United team?
I have to agree with Ori that you're going to probably see Zellerin start because you need to get him minutes, and I think that means that you'll get some better options on the wings, and that Pedro Santos might be able to go over to his preferred side on either the right. Or if you're starting Diaz, who's been kind of on the bench but made the difference in Houston, move him over to the left, then you have wingers that are a little bit more dynamic and be able to bring something to the table than you've seen that's just speed with Etienne and Boateng. And so I think that you're going to see some of these players get more time that need it. So Zellerin's going to be out there. I am thinking that you're going to see Nagby and Artur, who's apparently an Iron Man, and then probably Berhalter rotating in there. But you also have Fatai Alashe, who mm-hmm. has a certain defensive metal, which may well may actually, in hindsight, pardon me, work better when you have Zellerion in front of him, that you're not having to rely on that forward momentum. And so he might fit in there to kind of give you a little bit of a different dynamic than you've gotten in the past. Realistically, it's going to be maybe even a stronger lineup than Houston, because aside from Nemeth, you have some depth options that you can bring in that have produced some results this year.
What about at the center back position? You've got Buba Keita, and we talked about this, you know, these games as a chance to audition Buba Keita and Josh Williams. I think Josh Williams is probably one of those guys who's got a much higher floor in a you know, game performance than you've got from Buba, because you've seen the mistakes that the youngsters made and some that have cost them. But I think Keita is also one of those guys that has a higher ceiling and might be able that if you're Caleb Porter, I think you would prefer to have Buba Keita fight and force his way into that starting 11, because that means that he's playing on another level and reached another level that that I think Caleb might think he's able to.
But I think honestly it comes down to the matchup.
Mm-hmm.
What is the matchup that is going to work best for that back line, and whether you know, you can put Josh Williams with extensively more experience and having played against DC way more times, or you can go with the youth. And I don't think Buba has played bad. Occasionally he has these mind slips that you're like, dude, what are you doing? But I don't want to say it depends on the flow of the game, but it depends on how you're matching up with the opposing lineup, really, or what you think the opposing lineup's going to look like. And right now that might be a little bit different, since Ben Olsen is not coaching DC anymore, because you don't know what's going to be put in place. But I think you could go with either. You could go with either. Just it's a matchup thing at this point.
Gentlemen, what else should we be looking for in this DC matchup? I mean, again, you know, aside from maybe a couple vindictive raccoons or anything like that make the trip. What should we be expecting? And then we can maybe get into some picks.
This team absolutely, absolutely has to score first, and preferably early.
Great point.
That opens the play a lot more for the wingers, whoever they are. That opens the play a lot more for Lucas. That opens the play a lot more for Artur, in order for them to be more active, kind of open those lanes. But the more this team is on its back heel and is unable to score in the beginning of the game, the more it tends to come back to haunt them, because then they're pressing, and in their pressing, they're not making good selections, not making good passes. They're making some really terrible mistakes that they don't need to do. So yeah, score early.
Scoring early is incredibly crucial. And I also think getting two really good halves together, because we've seen fragments in the past couple of games. We've seen Columbus have really bad first halves and then come out of the gate with a better second half. We saw that especially in the FC Dallas game. Not a great first half, come out, play a better second half. We've seen opposites as well, where they've played a really good first half, thinking of Toronto and New York City. The Toronto game, they came out, had a bad second half and got destroyed. But New York City, they put the foot on the gas a little bit, but they were not the better team in the second half of that New York City game. They were playing on the back foot. New York City were allowed to play their game, and Columbus was dropping deep back just to get the win. I think you really need to see two good halves put together, like we saw at MLS's back and in the beginning of phase one. And we saw that from Columbus against weaker opposition. And we've seen Columbus play well against good teams. We just need to see two really good halves put together. I think they have a chance to start that trend against DC on Wednesday on the road, have a good first half, get the early goal, and then keep putting the pedal to the metal in the second half, because it's not just about getting points for seeding. You also have to prove a point that you're still a contender in this league for these playoffs heading into the dead of winter.
I think when I look at this game, I want to see what tempo the team plays through in midfield specifically. I think that you've seen bad crew performances really come from not necessarily stagnant midfield, but things aren't necessarily progressing through that midfield at any sort of pace. The wings may be a little too static, or, you know, your movement from your double pivot isn't as crisp, and movement forward is just a little bit too slow. Also, the spacing between the lines, because if you look at some of these bad performances again, they get stretched out an awful lot, where you have your defense and your midfield trying to break passes that are about 25, 30 yards, and that's not something where they are consistently able to turn that into something positive. So depending on who they play. And if Zellerand's in there, I'm really interested to see if there's some if this team is much more comfortable transitioning a little bit crisper, not out of control, but just be able to move a little bit faster from that defensive stance to an offensive attacking stance.
All right, now we got to get you guys on the record. Let's get some picks in. What are we expecting to see Wednesday night in DC? Sam, lead us off.
This is tough. Okay. I'm actually going to go. I really hope that Caleb had lit a fire under them after this last game, and the fact that they almost lost it to a team that they probably shouldn't have lost to. And I think they're going to go into DC and they're going to pull out a win, possibly a comeback win, 2-1.
Ooh. 2-1. Okay. Ori.
I just wrote down 2-1 10 seconds ago. So. I'm also going to go with 2-1. I think this team will have a fire lit under them. They're healthy. They're ready to go. You hope that there's not another instance. There's been too many crew games consecutively where we've seen one of the key players go down hurt and you're scared that they're going to be injured. And we've seen almost every key player be injured for a specific period of time during the season. But it's the end of the season. They're going to stay healthy. You're expecting them to play well. I think they come out and get the win on the road against DC. 2-1, 6 days before DC will be the center of the earth for the election.
Oh, don't remind me. Oh. All right, Patrick, what you got?
So I really wonder how the team comes out of another away game. They haven't solved this problem all year. Mm-hmm. There is no 2020 away game win. This season, the only thing that really came out of it is an MLS is back, where everybody was away except for Orlando, and even they were away. And so it really comes down to, for me, how they travel and if they are able to kind of figure that out. I think in this case, the short rest might help and that they are less thinking about that. I'm still not 100% convinced that they haven't worked themselves up into some sort of mind block around this, because Caleb will bring it up. It's something that he'll talk about. And it just seems like something that that they're still struggling with. I think this is a 1-1 draw.
Okay. A couple 2-1s and a 1-1. For the record, I think that this is going to be crew getting out of that funk. It's going to be 2-0, first road win of the season. And the catalyst is going to be a Lucas Zellerand golazo within the first 15 minutes. So crew get, you know, that elusive early goal and get a first clean sheet in at least a fortnight or so, and first road win. Moving on, we've got the main course really for this: Philadelphia. Top of the table right now in the Eastern Conference and in the MLS Cup stand, or MLS Supporters Cup. It will still be the Supporters Shield. Supporters Shield standings. Fresh off of just 5-0 thumping of Toronto, which you just hate to see. Just such a likable team with such a just likable fan base. Everything about it, it exudes class, and it's hard not to root for them. I think everyone's second team, the Toronto FC, but unfortunately they just got their asses kicked by this Philly team. But this is a Philadelphia team that's also been a little bit hot and cold themselves. What should we expect to see Sunday?
This is the best team in the league. It's simple. This is the best team in MLS. Since their MLS's back semifinal loss to Portland all the way back on August 5th, they've lost two games to Columbus and Toronto, both on the road. They've been winning like crazy. They're scoring goals. And they've got the best win in all of MLS this season, the most impressive win. If it was a college football, it would be like, you know, well, you know, the on-paper win, you know, Ohio State beat Michigan by this amount, and on paper, that's the result that puts them into the playoff kind of thing. That's what this 5-0 win over Toronto is. You'd expect them to get the job done against Chicago when Columbus is playing DC, and then they head back to Columbus. The game that they played all the way back that they lost in Columbus, only 1-0. Lucas Zelarayán scored an unbelievable goal in that game, and Philadelphia played well, but they are hitting their stride. They've got players who are way, way in form, the likes of Sergio Santos scoring that hat trick, you know, McKenzie playing well in midfield, Alejandro Bedoya playing well, the striker Shabilko, and also Brendan Aaronson, who's going to go to Salzburg after this season ends. You know, this team is ultra talented. Andre Blake may be the best goalkeeper in MLS right now. Jim Curtin has got his guys playing fantastic. And Philadelphia right now, they would be hosting MLS Cup if they made it all the way to the final.
Yeah, if you look back at that Philly loss in Columbus, they played Columbus even on the road. And so this is a team that has all that has interested me throughout the season. They've made a lot of good moves. They have a good coach. I think Jim Curtin's been doing yeoman's work for a long time. Poor man's Greg Berhalter, if you will. They've just built a comprehensive team, and it really kind of accelerated when they brought in Ernst Tanner as the general manager after Ernie Stewart left for the national team job. It's really an interesting and fun team to watch. They do a lot of things well, and yeah, they do have the statement win in MLS this year. So this is of any game left on the schedule, this is the one that I'm looking at where the crew are against the rest of the league, because they will, you know, to be the best, they have to beat the best. Right now, Philly's the best. They have one win. If they can come through and grab another, it kind of sets them up to say, hey, you know what? Remember back in the summer when we were good? We're getting there again.
Yeah, I think between what Ori and what Patrick said, there's really not much to add on there. I think it's going to be tough. It's going to be this is one of your, like, one of those, you get a pit in your stomach the whole time this game is happening, because you can expect a loss at any moment. And how the crew plays, how the crew prepares for Philadelphia, and how the crew plays Philadelphia is going to be really, really key, especially in the beginning of the game. So that's going to be, and it's going to be, and nobody has mentioned this, but this game is on ABC. So it's on national television for everybody to see. So I'm not sure I'm really excited to watch this game, because I have a fear of what it might turn out to be.
I think of any team in the league, Philly matches up very well about how they go about mid-pressing and their defensive stance against an offense like the Crews. Even when the Crew were in fine form back in early August, they lacked any sort of fluidity to play their own game. And that Zellerin goal was a deflection that kind of slipped past. And so you look at this Philly defense, they are well set up with how a lot of teams in MLS play, including the Crew. So I think this is one where, you know, Caleb Porter's busy doing his homework, trying to figure out how to prepare for this team. The players have to come in sharp, and it just makes it that much more challenging to get all 3 points when you're really trying to integrate a new player, key pieces back into the rotation, and trying to find form all at the same time. It's not that the Crew have necessarily been bad. You know, they've gotten results, but you know, to come at the Union with the Union coming to town, good won't be good enough.
and just so many unique circumstances for this game, besides being on national television in the middle of, you know, a Sunday of NFL football that's on Fox and CBS, ABC going to be showing this top of the line MLS game. You're talking about a match between the number one and number three team in all of MLS that is going to be happening on Sunday after these guys play a midweek game. But also it's the first day of November, the day after Halloween. It's daylight savings. It's going to be 3:30, but it's going to feel like 4:30 after we all got our extra hour of sleep. It's going to be dark by kickoff because we're all going to be in bed by 5 o'clock on Sunday. So it's such a unique game with unique circumstances, a truly interesting afternoon that will be happening in Columbus for the 1500 or so fans that will be able to see it and media.
And your lead up there just reminded me, Ori, this is one of the I would say the one of the few games recently that has kind of meant something as far as a regular season game in Mapfre Stadium history. I can remember the season closer for 2015 against DC United having a lead up in that it wasn't necessarily the matchup, but the importance of the game. What the result was and how it meant for the season kind of set things, you know, that thumping against DC United kind of set the stage for, you know, a great run in 2015 that ended somehow. I believe that's lost to the mists of time. But this could shape up much like that.
So I think, you know, one of my few bright spots about this is, you know, the fact that this game is happening in Columbus and it's, you know, a home game. And we obviously know Crew have been, you know, probably exceptionally poor on the road, but it's still difficult conditions, you know, doing that same day travel. You know, on top of that, this is an earlier game, odd time. You mentioned it there, Ori, at 3:30. It's not like an evening game, so you can, you know, get into your normal game day routines for your 7:30 game or anything like that. Do you think that's going to have any impact for Columbus or Philadelphia, either way, this venue, especially when the fans are really – they're there and they make more noise than you expect. I give them credit definitely to that, but it's nowhere near the sort of, you know, home field advantage that you would expect otherwise for a game of this magnitude in Mapfre Stadium.
I think it'll factor worse for Philly than Columbus simply because of the fact that they got to come to Ohio. It's not that long of a flight. Philly to Columbus is not really as much of a flight. It's not like Columbus going to Houston or Orlando. And that's one thing that I want to go back for Wednesday's game and mention. Columbus to DC, it's not as bad of a travel day as going to Houston or going to Orlando. So I think the same day travel for the DC game, I don't think it'll affect the team as much as we've seen them when they had to go to, you know, Houston or Dallas, for example, since those are longer road trips. But for Philly, you have to think of what the schedule will be like for them. They got to get to Columbus at 3:30. Sure, they're getting that extra hour of sleep, but they got to make sure their clocks are right. They got to probably leave the City of Brotherly Love probably around 7, 8 a.m., you know, for about an hour or so flight. That's about how long it takes to fly from Philly to Columbus. So they can get an early flight, get to the stadium, you know, get ready for the game around early afternoon or so, but they don't have a lot of time to really settle themselves in if they're flying in early. I think for Columbus, you know, they'll prepare themselves. They'll figure out a good schedule for Friday and Saturday, 2 days and a day before the match in regards to their training and their rest, and they'll be ready to go for Sunday afternoon, especially now that for their home games, you know, you have your last two home games at 3:30 in the afternoon, and then assuming Columbus will host their first playoff game, you would probably also expect the time to be around that time in the afternoon, depending on if it's on a Saturday or a Sunday, because we've seen MLS Cup playoff games. You know, you have your set 1 o'clock, maybe a 3:30 game. Then you have, you know, your mid-evening games. And if they're going to have Western Conference and Eastern Conference on the same day, it's more than likely that the Eastern Conference games would be earlier than the Western Conference games just to, you know, accommodate for Western Conference television, especially, you know, if you have LAFC playing Minnesota in Los Angeles on a weekend, you're going to have that game at 10:30. So those guys can watch it at 7:30. So I think Philadelphia is in a little bit of a tougher position for Sunday just because the travel is different. They don't have all day to get settled in. They only have a part of the day because the game is a lot earlier. They got to be ready about probably 12:30, 1 o'clock, even earlier than that for the game.
So home field advantage, Columbus, we got to get you guys on the record now though. What do you think is going to be our end result? We'll lead off with Patrick.
I think this one's going to be a grind. I think it'll be a lot similar to a lot like the August matchup where Union's going to throw their best shot. And I think since Columbus rises to the occasion, I think this is going to be the same 1-0 scoreline with the Crew pulling out a victory.
That's what I like to hear. Okay, Ori, keep it going. Keep it going.
I got Philly.
Cut his mic, Sam.
Philly is a very, very good team. I think the stride they're hitting and how well they've been playing since the MLS's back tournament, they've shown that they're the best team in the league. They've developed a rhythm on the road. I mean, I'm looking since their loss to Columbus, you look at their performances on the road. They go to New York and beat the Red Bulls 3-0. They go to New York again to play Montreal and win 4-1. Granted, it's not that much of a trip, but still, they've developed some kind of a road pattern. They beat New England on the road as well. This is one of the further road trips they've had, you know, on the road tying D.C. That was an impressive result for D.C., and they found most of their points at home. But they've gotten points on the road. Columbus can't really say the same. They haven't been able to get many points on the road. Philadelphia has. And I think Philadelphia is going to learn from that game all the way back that they lost to Columbus in the beginning of September. They're playing fantastic. They're going to set themselves up as the favorite to win MLS Cup for 2020. I think they're going to beat the Crew 2-1, and Columbus will enter the Orlando and Atlanta games in search for probably a number 2 or number 3 seed to end the season.
Sam, I need you to fix this, to right this ship. Do it.
I will right this ship in the fact that I'm going to call for a 1-1 draw. Because I think that's probably the one thing that Columbus has going for it, possibly Montreal game notwithstanding, is that they've played fairly well at home and they've, you know, made it kind of the fortress that it needs to be. And it might be, like Ori said actually earlier, you know, getting ready on a daylight savings change time, that might mess with Philly having to travel than it will with Columbus. So I think that gives Columbus just a little bit of an upper hand. And I think that upper hand is enough to offset the fact that Philly has been so hot. So I'm calling for a 1-1 draw.
I'm calling for some industrious Crew fans to figure out how to screw with Brendan Aaronson's alarm clock to make sure that he misses the plane. Because I wouldn't mind if we got to play them without that youngster in the lineup. I was debating. I think we're going to get some goals. I think we're going to get some goals out of this one. I think Columbus is going to come away with the win, though. I'm going to say 3-2. And I think you are going to see Jossie Zardes back in the lineup with a vengeance. Jossie Zardes brace.
I doubt Brendan Aaronson has ever had a regular alarm clock. He's probably only used his phone to wake up. I can say the kid. I'm 4 years older than him. He was born in 2000. How does that when I was a kid, when I was reading about old baseball players and I saw people, they're like, these guys were born in 1896. That's so long ago. So long ago. That's what we are now. It's like we were born in the late 90s, and then these people coming in born in early 2000s. Like,
speak for yourself, kids. Yeah.
But if you want to mess with Brendan Aaronson's alarm clock, somebody basically has to tap his phone.
Yeah. I started doing that bit and then quickly realized I've become the boomer. It's like, might've been like, somebody should switch the CDs in his CD player around.
He just turned 25 days ago. He just had a birthday. He's reached the 2-decade mark. So, I mean, how about that for a birthday? 10-22-2000. That's a lot of twos and zeros right there and ones. But he's a hell of a player. And honestly, expect to see Brandon Aaronson in a U.S. jersey sooner rather than later. I think we can expect to see some caps from him for the men's national team in the near future now that he's going to Europe.
Let's just hope that he doesn't do anything to get the eye of Greg Berhalter trained on him Sunday, at least, or at least not for any positive reasons. Gentlemen, any other parting shots before we wrap this guy up?
I think the supporter shield is back, by the way.
Has that been confirmed?
I believe it is back.
Yeah, so its brief hiatus is now over.
But it's still not MLS's. They took that off the website in a jiff, and they are slow rolling putting it back. Somebody, whoever's got the keys for their content management system, is just like, oops, I just keep forgetting to hit publish on the supporter shield one. Darn, I guess.
Patrick, where are you seeing the supporter shield back?
I now need to look for it because I thought I had seen that it was back and I can't.
It was posted on Twitter a couple of days ago.
I just look on Twitter. My whole feed is Randy Arozarena hits a home run in the first inning. That's all I see right now.
Yeah, it will be awarded after reversal. They basically had the independent supporters. We can read the entire statement, but honestly, this was the dumbest thing to happen in an extremely dumb year. Maybe not the dumbest. That might even, by her hyperbolic standards, that might be a little bit too much. But it was incredibly stupid, dumb story. It was exhausting, and I'm just glad it's over. Boy. Well, gentlemen, that was something. That certainly was something, but it was a pleasure catching up with all you guys. Let's do it again. Let's screw it. I think this is Caleb, our Caleb Porter, who I don't know who the Caleb Porter is for the Master Report, but he's going to see that this lineup, it just produced. You can't argue with the results, because all you guys listening are going to go and rate it 5 stars and send very nice, effusive comments. And again, if you've got bad things to say, send those to Patrick Murphy. For Sam, for Patrick Gul'dan, for Ori, this is Bart saying bye, buddies.